This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. One of the things Austin, Texas is best known for is music, and one of the reasons why is pianist, singer, and songwriter Marsha Ball. In Rolling Stone, she was described as playing with a sort of rollicking spirit that can't be taught but must be felt. Her music is steeped in the rhythms of the Gulf Coast. She grew up in Louisiana on the Texas border and has lived in Austin since the early 70s. She's made several recordings for Rounder Records. On a recent trip to Austin, I hosted an onstage concert and interview with Marsha Ball to benefit public radio station KUT. Tracy Nelson also joined us. We heard part of Nelson's concert a couple of weeks ago. We'll hear more later today. Ball and Nelson, along with singer Irma Thomas, trade solos and do backup vocals for each other on the new CD, Sing It. Here's a song from it featuring Marsha Ball singing. Marsha Ball grew up in a small town in Louisiana. I asked her to describe it.
Well, I kind of did in one of my songs. It's 10 blocks square. I didn't realize this until I had left because it was my whole world for 17 years. My parents kept me pretty much right there in town, although there were honky-tonks all around and, you know, you'd go one town or another to shop or to go to a movie, but for the most part, we were in that town, and it wasn't until I had left town, and actually I was running, I was jogging one day, and I was standing on one street, and there was a sign that said Catholic Church, 8 blocks, and I thought, well, I'm on the westmost street, and that's only 2 blocks away from the eastmost street, so there's really only 10 blocks in this whole town, and that's how big it is.
Well, you have a song that I'd like you to play that I imagine is pretty autobiographical called Down the Road. And maybe you could do the song for us, and then we could talk a little bit more about that period of your life.
All right. It's an autobiography. Right. Good times are down the road. And Mama won't let me go. I'm sneaking off in my daddy's car. And parked behind the B&B bar. Thinking I'll go crazy if I can't get out. On a dead-end street in a 10-block town. One day I'll take the coastal bend, hit the Gulf of Mexico and drive on in. Down the road, down the road, down the road, down the road. Damp nights and a heavy heart. When will my real life start? I'm tired of six packs and driving shows and talking back to the radio. I got wheels and I'm ready to pack, but I don't know what's holding me back. Every day I say I'm gone and then every night I'm in the joints again. Down the road, down the road, down the road, down the road. Thank you. bobbing through the fog, a siren screaming on a one-lane street. I could hear it from my bedroom screen. Thin walls in a cheap hotel, people next door, they fighting like hell, and drinking whiskey from a paper cup, and watching TV till the sun comes up. Down the road, down the road, down the road, down the road. Chicken neck, smoking camels I stole from a pack, and watching crabs swimming in the trap, and wishing I could take the water away from Lake Charles on up to Galveston Bay, and keep on going to the open sea, wild like the wind and running free. Down the road, let the good times roll. Down the road, let me free my soul. Down the road, I got to go down the road. Seems so long there's not a band there, and you know, people aren't dancing in front of you. People are actually paying attention.
Are you more used to people dancing than on a concert stage?
Yes.
How do you like the concert stage?
It makes me nervous.
Well, you sound good.
Not the thing.
So could you actually hear music coming out of the clubs from your window at home?
I lived across the street from the Catholic Hall growing up, and I had a real incredible moment of deja vu not long ago. I was in a vintage store, and I pulled this dress off the rack, and I thought, oh, God. It reminded me of Wednesday nights in the summer when you'd play outside. You're just on the cusp. You know, you'd play outside until you're just covered with grass and red bugs and little dirt necklaces and bracelets and everything. Then you'd run in, and you'd take a shower. It'd be so hot, or take a bath. You'd be so hot still, you'd still be sweating. You'd put on this was this little cotton dress with a full skirt and rickrack down the front, just like one of those dresses that we put on, and go to the dance across the street.
Huh. So did you go through a period of, when you got out of your 10-block town, of going wild?
Yeah, in a way I did. I was in, I grew up in what I really think are the best of times. You know, a childhood in the 50s in a small town, and then growing up, coming of age in the 60s and, you know, in a college. I didn't go wild enough. I mean, I didn't go to Berkeley or anything. I didn't go to San Francisco for like some people I could name. But I did go to Baton Rouge to go to college, and I was only 17 when I went. And it was just, you know, the greatest time of free love and, you know, protest politics and no diseases that you couldn't cure with penicillin and, you know, available birth control, and even the drugs weren't as strong or as dangerous as, you know, as they are now. So,
but no.
We had the best cars, we had the best music, we just had that goofy clothes, which is real popular right now.
No, musically, my understanding is that before you started doing a lot of rhythm and blues, you were singing more, you know, quote, psychedelic music?
Yeah. Started out in a rock band.
What was your repertoire in your early rock band?
Well, I did a lot of Janis, or some Janis and some Grace Slick and some Jimi Hendrix. I sang a couple of songs. I did a Janis Ian song, and then a little bit of blues. We also, you know, Slim Harpo lived right across the river.
So what was your personality on stage when you started, when you were in that period?
Well, I didn't play piano. I stood up and sang. My hair was straightened, you know, parted in the middle and down to here, and just came down my face kind of like this, and I wore Nehru jackets. And that's all. I didn't wear Nehru pants.
What was your voice like? Did you?
I sounded quite a bit like Janis at the, or I could sound quite a bit like Janis,
which was much more of a screaming, belting kind of voice than what.
Well, it was, and which is why I enjoyed the change of styles when I started singing country, because that was an opportunity to sing songs with melodies. Not to say, I mean, I still do "Peace of My Heart." I love that song.
So, you know, you started country when you came to... I knew you were doing country when you came to Austin, but let's backtrack a little. You said you never went to San Francisco, but you tried.
We broke down.
Tell us the story of what happened on the way to San Francisco.
Well, we got to Austin, and... you know... Look at him. I know why y'all are here, too. We got here, we had a lot, there was a lot of interaction between Baton Rouge and Austin before I got here. To us, it really was the third coast. We were getting posters from the Vulcan Gas Company that looked just like the Family Dog posters and the Fillmore posters that were coming from the West Coast and from New York, and there was a good music scene and already. And
did you figure out at some point that maybe there was already enough, like Grace Slick, and there was Grace Slick and Janis Joplin and a lot of people trying to be them, that maybe you were better off trying to figure out who you were? Or?
In a way, I did, and I'll be honest with you. I used to work here at the university. This is what I did. That was the other reason I stayed, was that I had a friend who worked at the university and could get anybody a job in the library. So I worked here, and we would drive home, living in South Austin, same neighborhood I still live in, and we would be listening to the radio, and I guess it was probably 71 in the middle of all this, and Tracy Nelson would come on the radio. I think, damn, I can do that. That's what I want to do. So, I was already kind of moving, and, I picked up things from everybody along the way.
Would you do a few bars of a country song that you did in your country period?
We have a key here. You're mine for just a while. Now you're putting on the style, and you'll never once look back to your home across the track. You're the gossip of the town, but your heart can still be found where they tossed it on. Pick me up on your way down.
That's a nice song.
We'll get back to the onstage concert and interview with Marshall Ball after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to the onstage concert and interview with pianist, singer, and songwriter Marshall Ball, recorded in September in Austin, Texas, where Ball lives.
Okay. Well, Marshall Ball, I really love your piano playing as well as your songs and singing. And I thought we might start with the piano playing. How old were you when you started playing?
I started taking lessons when I was 5 years old.
Now, we hear the kind of music you play now. What were you learning when you were 5?
Well, I started, kiddie classicals like everybody does. But I had piano players in my family, so there was piano to listen to, and... my grandmother was a ragtime piano player and kind of came out of the Tin Pan Alley generation in that era. She had a window seat full of sheet music, and so I could
great.
Even pick out some of that and listen to her.
Now, you were born and grew up in Louisiana. What do you consider the regional rhythms are just a part of you living there?
Well, I actually was born in Orange, Texas. I want to go ahead and claim dual citizenship while I'm at it. And I grew up right across the state line in Vinton, Louisiana. And I don't accept that border. I don't give credence to that as the Sabine River as being a border.
We are given this choice when we're born in this country, to just ignore the borders.
I think that the Gulf Coast is a region and, you know, could be considered a state, and especially from the Lake Charles to Beaumont and Port Arthur area, which has spawned so much great music, and you can't divide, you know. So if Clifton Chenier lived in Port Arthur and Gatemouth Brown, you know, lived in Orange, Texas, and Guitar Junior, who's now Lonnie Brooks, lived in Lake Charles, where's there a line there that... but the rhythm is, my favorite is the old 6/8, you know. You gave me love when there was none. Matilda, you know, that's a, Matilda, you're the only one. The Gulf Coast 6/8 soul sound.
What else do you consider unique to
We had a lot of Zydeco and Cajun music, you know. Well, my sister got married at a very early age. Mama got her ready for a wedding day. Everybody came to see the beautiful bride. Like that, a good Cajun two-step, waltzes. Jolie Blanc type waltzes, and then the Zydeco.
Did you have teachers who taught you this, or did you just pick it up from listening to records?
No, and I picked up most of this as an adult, really, as a piano player in bands. I grew up, you know, listening to How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? And My grandmother played.
Did they encourage you or discourage you or none of the above from playing rhythm and blues?
Well, that came later, I guess. You know, I loved to boogie woogie from the first time that I could hear that. I, you know, was trying to make my hands go the octave so I could, you know, so I could try to do the octave and to stride and. They didn't discourage me. I could always get out of doing housework by playing the piano.
You know, I think the stereotype is that there's a lot more men than women who play that kind of two-fisted type of piano. Have you found that to be true, that there's not that many women that you know who play like that?
No, there aren't many. There are some. Katie Webster
comes
to mind immediately as a, you know, great piano pounder and... Carol Fran from down in Houston, who plays, actually she's got a more sophisticated style to draw from too, but she also can wail.
What kind of reactions did you get when you started playing? Were people surprised?
Well, it's kind of been a gradual progression for me to get to this point with the piano. I mean, I've really played rhythm piano in the country band and started out with the front. Really, when I discovered Professor Longhair, which I came kind of late to, considering that I grew up in Louisiana, but his stuff wasn't really available to us readily in the country, and his early recordings had fallen out of print, and so it wasn't until the late 70s when Atlantic started reissuing a series of records that they'd made in the 50s, and a wonderful band here named Uncle Walt's Band did a song called In the Night. And I asked them where it came from because it really hit me right away, and they just opened this door of material.
Play
to me.
A little of something that he played that you learned. Marsha Ball recorded on stage in Austin, Texas in September. We'll hear more in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of an onstage concert and interview with pianist, singer, and songwriter Marsha Ball. She grew up in a small town in Louisiana and has lived in Austin, Texas since the early 70s. Her music is powered by the rhythms of the Gulf Coast. Marsha Ball records for Rounder Records. She trades vocals with Tracy Nelson and Irma Thomas on the new CD, Sing It. Early in Ball's career, her emphasis was more on singing than on playing piano. She sang in a country music group. Then she moved on to rhythm and blues.
So rhythm and blues, when did you start figuring bringing piano back into the picture?
I played piano in the country band, and after that band broke up, I had to decide whether to start a band, join a band, or, you know, have another life, do something else. And I decided, I was in another band for a while, I joined a band for a while, and that didn't really work out. And so I needed to start a band, and frankly, I started it because I needed to call the shots because I was pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
And I needed to be able to say where we were going and when, and this is my nanny, and this is my baby, and, you know, I needed to be able to call the shots. So I started a band. I didn't tell them I was pregnant when I put it together, and that worked out. And then I gradually did more and more R&B, and that was really about the time I went to Louisiana with my old roommate who had moved here, who was living here, but, you know, we kind of stayed with her for a while when we moved in. And we went back, and we found Irma on that trip in Abbeville playing a gig.
Irma Thomas.
And I met her then, and we were on a search for Irma's records because I knew that was the direction I was going to be moving in, and I wanted to go find It's Raining So Hard and Ruler of My Heart and all those great songs.
So when you started playing rhythm and blues and seeking out more material, did you find songs that you felt comfortable with?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a wealth of material. I'm still amazed. I was talking to Tracy earlier about songs that I've dropped from my repertoire. Mm-hmm. Some things that I've never recorded, but just great songs that I don't do anymore just because, you know, you replace them with something else, but then you're thinking, it's Ease the Pain. That was the name of it. And I think it's Jackie Wilson. And it's not a gender thing. We were also complaining about how, you know, sometimes when you're looking for a song, somebody say, well, you can't do that. That's a man's song.
Well, another thing, though,
your pardon.
Well, particularly in some blues and rhythm and blues songs, there are some songs that just sound, well, really pretty sexist. And they were written, I think, in a time before people thought about that a whole lot. And I think you've kind of turned that on its ear a little bit. Like you do a lot of some of the double entendre songs that other people have written. And you even came up with one of your own. And before you play the one that you wrote, talk a little bit about why you like doing songs like that. The songs that are double entendres about sex that don't come out and say it, but just tease about it a lot.
Well, it's just fun. And you know, it's all about, in a way, you know, a lot of blues is, and I don't even get approached the old Jelly Roll type songs. You know, I've got a stack of CDs of old stuff. And that was one of the reasons when I did Let Me Play With Your Poodle. And I thought, you know, take it any way you want. But this record was released in 1942. And if they could take it, then I think we probably could too. And instead, I just get lots of pictures of people's poodles.
Why don't you play us the song that you wrote?
Okay. It's called The Right Tool for the Job. And I want to send... I'm going to send it out to my husband, who thinks a screwdriver is a special tool. When I go to eat my dinner, I reach for my spoon and fork. To cut my steak, I make sure my knife is sharp. And when I want to hang a picture, I reach for a hammer and nail. And if I've got to clean the floor, I get out the mop and pail. I don't like to waste my time. I make sure I've got the right tool for the job. The right tool for the job. The right tool for the job. I want a car that goes real fast. And when I listen to music, I want the radio to blast. And if my house is burning down, get the fire truck real quick and take me to the finest doctor, y'all. If I start to feeling sick, I want an ice. winter stays cold. A stove that gets real hot, the right tube on the job. The right tube on the job. The right tube on the job. I want a fan that keeps me cool at night. A hum that always loves me right. The right tube for the job. The right tube for the job.
Marsha, would you explain the lyric to me? No. What our radio listeners can't see, but what everyone else can, is that you're really tall. And I'm wondering if you felt much more comfortable with that when you started getting on stage than you did before that, because I think people are always self-conscious when they're very short like me or very tall like you. But being tall on stage is a wonderful thing to be.
It's turned out to be an asset and an attribute. But, yeah, there were many years. I feel like the years of pleasure I've gotten out of it have balanced almost the years of of being the tallest thing, I mean, in my parish. Not just the tallest girl, I mean, the tallest thing.
For several years, you and your husband ran a restaurant club in Austin.
Yeah.
That was very popular, and I think you gave it up a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
What did you learn about the music business? What insights did you get from running a club that you were different from the ones you had from performing in them?
Oh, it made me an incredibly understanding performer. I count the gate about as with as much nervous tension as the club owner does, and I know what that feels like. I know what it's like to pay out money that didn't come in at the door mm-hmm. at the end of the night, and it's made me understanding, and there's a lot of stuff. I'm not real demanding of a lot of things in terms of sound systems, and you just kind of take a club on the strength of what it is, and some of your favorite places and your best places have these little quirks that... one of the my favorite places I ever played was a place called Jay's Lounge and Cockpit in Canton, Louisiana. And the first time we got there, the parking lot was full of cars, and we thought, all right, you know, big crowd. And we walked in, there's nobody in the room. But you could hear the noise out back, and if you walked through the bar and into the cockpit in the back, there was a cockfight going on. And it was packed. And then that was over, and then the band played, and then they served us gumbo at the end of the night.
What song went over
chicken
best in that
gumbo,
atmosphere?
I might add.
Oh yeah. What song went over best in that club?
Oh. Clifton Chenier song.
Right. Marsha Ball recorded in Austin, Texas at a benefit concert for station KUT.